You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
It is the 19th of June. Happy birthday to Rahul Gandhi. What else happened on this particular day that you absolutely must know? It also happens to be Wallace Simpson's birth anniversary. Why is Wallace Simpson important? Because, well, there was a man who said no to being the King of England just because he wanted to marry her. Speaking of the British royal family, did you also know that it was on this particular day, the 19th of June, as late as 1917, just about 100 years ago, that the British royal family, which has had such strong German ties since the time of George I, renounced its German names and adopted the name of Windsor. So the Queen of England is actually called Elizabeth Windsor, and that sort of thing only happened just about 100 years ago, starting from this particular day. Well, largely because the British royal family wanted to distance themselves as much as possible from Germany, considering this was the time just after the First World War. It also happens to be the day that the Colombian drug lord Pablo Escobar, whom we all know because of Narcos, because, you know, everybody watches that show, he surrendered to police in 1991 on this particular day. So, several different kinds of events are happening in the world on this day, but what happened on the 19th of June 2019? That is precisely what I bring to you, because as I keep insisting, you can't read 10 different newspapers, you can't read 20 different news websites for you. That's why I am here. This is Stories of the Day with me, Rakesh Sharma.
Editors, pick of the day.
Well, in the trade war that is ongoing between the United States and China, a third one appears to be getting lucky. Who is that? Well, I've hinted at it a few days ago, and it turns out there is a new report that says it is going to be India. Apple Inc., for example, has asked its major suppliers to assess the cost implications of moving 15 to 30% of their production capacity from China to Southeast Asia as it prepares for a restructuring of its supply chain, according to a report on Wednesday today by the Nikkei Asian Review. Apple's request was a result of the trade war, obviously, but a trade resolution will not lead to a change in the company's decision. So Apple has decided that the risks of depending heavily on China for manufacturing are too great, and they're continuing to rise, so they've decided to move a part of it elsewhere. Key iPhone assemblers, that is Foxconn, Pegatron Corp, Wistron Corp, major MacBook maker, that is Quanta Computer, iPad maker Compal Electronics, and AirPods maker Inventec Corp, Luxshare ICT, and Gertek have all been asked to evaluate options outside of China. Now, the countries being considered include Mexico, Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the reason I bring this up, India. India and Vietnam are apparently among the favorites for smartphones, according to Nikkei, citing sources who did not want to be identified. Only last week, I spoke to you about how Foxconn said it had enough capacity outside of China to meet Apple's demand in the American market if the company needed to adjust its production lines. Now, Donald Trump, as we all know, has threatened to slap a further $300 billion tariffs on Chinese goods. And China is a key market for Apple, as well as a major production center for several of its devices. Now, we already know that Bangalore is a center. Wistron Corp, I think, makes iPhones here. So we could just be seeing more iPhone manufacturing here in India because of the trade war going on between the US and China. So news has emerged that Jio might just have another win. So when Jio had entered the market, both Bharti Airtel and Vodafone Idea had denied interconnection to Jio in 2016. That is, when Jio entered the market. Jio had then said this was wrong and we're going to make a complaint. Now that fight seems to be coming to an end because there has been an approval on the penalty by the Digital Communications Commission, which is the DoT's highest decision-making body. But the panel there has asked TRAI to review the initial suggested penalty amount of 30.5 billion rupees, or about 3,050 crore rupees. Now, as soon as the news of the approval of this penalty came in, shares of both Airtel and Vodafone Idea fell 2.6 and 3.8% respectively. All right, so Jio, of course, has been a huge disruptor as far as India's telecom industry is concerned. It currently has about 306.7 million users in India. Its competitors, who obviously have a larger user base, have continued to feel the pressure. Both Vodafone Idea and Airtel lost consumers in March 2019, and their tally now stands at 394.8 million, that is for Vodafone Idea, and 325 million for Airtel. While Bharti Airtel lost 15.1 million consumers, Vodafone Idea has lost 14.5 million consumers in March. So the rout is real. And now there appears to be another victory for Mukesh Ambani. Well, if it's a win for one Ambani, it appears to be, well, a loss for another Ambani, at least a loss of the status of a billionaire. News reports have now emerged that Ambani, the Anil one, over a decade ago was one of the richest people in the world. He had a net worth of about $42 billion, if not more. And he may not be a billionaire anymore. At Tuesday's close of trading on Dalal Street, the combined market cap of Anil Ambani-controlled Reliance Group companies was $773 million. Anil Ambani holds less than 75% stake in each of the six companies in the group. The group used to have seven. Reliance Communications is, of course, now defunct. Going by the market value of listed companies in the group, the younger Ambani would be worth much less than the billion-dollar mark. Reliance Nippon Life Assets Management, which was a joint venture with the Japanese life insurance company Nippon Life, has been sold to its partner only recently. So it is currently valued at about $2 billion and the fund house is in the process of being transferred to Nippon exclusively. At the peak of his wealth in 2008, Anil Ambani had a net worth of about $42 billion. And because of the global financial crisis, he took a huge hit. And by early 2009, he saw almost 75% of his wealth vanish. In addition to these troubles, obviously, auditors have resigned from three of his companies, Reliance Capital, Reliance Home Finance, and Reliance Infrastructure, after alleging non-cooperation and wrongdoings on the part of their management. The Reliance Group is, of course, fighting these allegations by the auditors. So the troubles seem to be coming in droves for Anil Ambani. Speaking of billionaires, there's an exclusive club of people with $100 billion, and the world, at present, has three of them. Bernard Arnault, Europe's richest person, just joined Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates in the world's most exclusive wealth club with a fortune of at least $100 billion. Arnault, who is the chairman of LVMH, entered the ranks of centibillionaires on Tuesday as the luxury goods maker climbed 2.9% to a record 360.8 euros a share. His net worth has increased almost $32 billion this year. Just to put it in perspective, Arnault's wealth of $100.4 billion is almost 3% of all of France's economy. Just think about that. SBI Life Insurance is one of the largest insurance companies in the country. I say largest, even though it has only 2.1% of India's total 331 million life insurance policies, because the lion's share, 88% of these policies, are held by the Life Insurance Corporation. Now, SBI Life's CIO, that is Chief Investment Officer, Gopi Krishna Shenoy, has come out and said it is time to take some money out of equities in India because valuations are looking stretched. He said there is no immediate indicator of a return to sound earnings growth and it will take some time, unquote. According to a report on Bloomberg, uncertainty about the poll outcome, which culminated in Modi's re-election, prompted investors to shift into shares of top Indian companies over the past 18 months from their smaller counterparts. Now, during this period, the BSE Sensex and the Nifty 50 rose at least 12%, while the NSE measure of mid-sized companies fell by 15% and small cap, as we know, has fallen by about 29%. Shenoy, who oversees about $20 billion worth of assets, of which 23% is in equities, has reduced his shareholdings in top automakers, cement producers, and consumer staple companies. The life insurer also sold some shares in software exporters, barring, of course, the top two, that is TCS and Infosys. Still, he is looking to reinvest the cash back into equities, says Bloomberg. Even as SBI Life continues to remain upbeat on banking stocks, it plans to buy into any dip in consumer and automobile stocks, mainly those of utility vehicles and motorbike makers. So if you are planning on investing in shares, there's a tip from SBI's CIO, Gopi Krishna Shenoy. Business Standard has reported that Paytm Money has plans to raise around $1.2 billion in a mega funding round. Paytm Money, which is of course the wholly owned subsidiary of mobile wallet giant Paytm, is planning to raise $1.2 billion, according to people in the know. They said the company is eyeing a rapid expansion in the mutual fund, insurance, and financial services space in 2019. It is believed, Business Standard reported, that this funding round will help it get the added traction. The people who were in the know who spoke to Business Standard said existing investors, including SoftBank and Alibaba's financial affiliate, that is Ant Financial, are interested in the round. If you've been wondering what the rankings in this particular space are, here they are. Hotstar is India's most popular OTT video platform, and that is followed by Amazon's Prime Video and Sony Live. And then if you've been wondering where Netflix is, it is in position number 4. Netflix and Prime are obviously very popular in metros. The top 5 metros of the country account for more than 65% users of these platforms. Hotstar, meanwhile, has 56% of their users from metro cities, the rest from non-metro cities. The platform also has the highest penetration of non-paying users, that is, Hotstar. Eros Now has the highest percentage of its users consuming content on smart TVs. Among OTT users in India, Reliance Jio is the most popular network, and then Airtel, and then Vodafone Idea. In relation to that, a new report has come from Ericsson, which is the Swedish telecom equipment maker, which says that India has the highest data usage per smartphone, reaching 9.8 GB per month at the end of 2018. This is, of course, in relation to Jio's entry in 2016, and since then, we can almost see how India's data consumption has exploded. The report also predicted that the total mobile data traffic per month is expected to grow at a CAGR of 23% from 4.6 exabytes in 2018 to 16 exabytes in 2024. The report went on to say that total smartphone subscriptions in India will reach 1.1 billion by 2024. And if you're wondering what Exa is 10 to the power of 18. So by 2024, it's expected to be 16 into 10 to the power of 18 byte consumption in India. That is so many zeros, I can't even process it. Well, some news coming out about Bangalore. According to Real Estate FDI, Bangalore has entered the list of top 10 cities in APAC. Bangalore has become the first Indian city in the list of preferred investment destinations on the basis of its growing reputation across the globe as the home base to several international corporates. India was among the top 5 preferred markets in APAC with the launch of the first real estate investment trust and the resulting improved market transparency, according to property consultant CBRE in its Asia-Pacific Investor Intention Survey of 2019. Bangalore has received over $1.6 billion in cross-border investments in this particular year. In 2017-2018, that was $800 million, and in just about a year, it has doubled. Now, while that is good news for investment in Bangalore, for a city that has had to grow up to be a city in a short span of 20 years, I can only say as a resident of the city, it was just not equipped. Simply not. In a news report that has just emerged, HDFC will acquire Apollo Hospital Group's entire 50.8% stake in Apollo Munich Health Insurance Limited and 0.4% stake held by a few employees for 1,336 crores and 10.84 crore rupees, respectively. The combined entity, which will have a gross premium of 10,807 crore rupees, will have a market share of 6.4% in the country's non-life insurance market. The merger is subject to regulatory approvals. This, according to a report on Mint. PTI has just reported that the finance ministry is preparing a fresh proposal for the sale of Air India, incorporating issues like crude oil prices and exchange rate volatility flagged by Ernst & Young last year on possible reasons of why the government failed to attract bidders for Air India. The AISAM, which is the alternative mechanism, will be reconstituted as Arun Jaitley and Suresh Prabhu are no longer ministers in the government. This time, it'll have Nirmala Sitharaman and Hardeep Singh Puri, who is the civil aviation minister. Nitin Gadkari is also likely to continue in the panel. The Economic Advisory Council to the Prime Minister today rejected the claims of Arvind Subramanian regarding overestimation of GDP growth after 2011. They have said his analysis ignores data on services and agriculture and shows blind trust in a private firm. We had spoken about this earlier. Arvind Subramanian, who was the chief economic advisor, came out and said the growth that India claims to have had in these years of 7-something%, not really so. It was more likely in the range of 4.5%. And now the Economic Advisory Council has said, we reject those claims. Well, turning to other important news making the rounds in the country, the death toll from acute encephalitis syndrome in Muzaffarpur in Bihar has continued to rise. So far, 130 children have been killed in Bihar. Chief Minister Nitish Kumar has come under heavy criticism for his delayed actions. Mr. Kumar, who made his first visit to Muzaffarpur only yesterday, that is 18 days after the outbreak, was met with cries of "Wapas Jao, Wapas Jao" by angry parents who have lost their children. A petition has in fact been filed with the Supreme Court alleging that the Muzaffarpur deaths were a direct result of negligence and inaction in handling the outbreaks of AES and Japanese encephalitis by both governments. We've seen a lot of politicians tweet about the India-Pakistan cricket match, but I haven't seen a lot of politicians come out and talk about what is in fact a growing and heartbreaking public health crisis in Bihar. I don't mean to editorialize, but isn't there already enough spotlight on cricket, and should we not be talking about what's happening in Bihar and hopefully containing it as soon as possible? Well, if any politician is listening, which I'm certain you are, shame on you. So we know that Mr. Modi is keen on his One Nation, One Election initiative, which he claims is going to save both time and money. But it is finding very few takers. Congress has refused to attend the meeting. Mamata Banerjee has expressed her reservations about the modality. Mayawati has in fact mocked the government. She said, if the meeting had been about electronic voting machines, I would have gone unattended, but this is not. So the implementation of this One Nation, One Election idea will require an amendment to the constitution, which cannot be done without two-thirds majority in both houses of the parliament, which means Modi requires support from other parties as well. Mamata Banerjee in fact has written to Parliamentary Affairs Minister Prahlad Joshi, contending that a single meeting is not enough to respond on this particular initiative, and ask the government for a white paper so that the different parties can consult experts and give feedback. Delhi Chief Minister Arvind Kejriwal and TDP Chief Chandrababu Naidu have delegated representatives, that is Raghav Chadha for Aam Aadmi Party and Jaydev Galla for TDP. Even though he had expressed an opinion that the meeting would not help his state, Telangana Chief Minister K. Chandrasekhar Rao is sending his son. This meeting, in addition to the One Nation, One Election initiative, will also be discussing Niti Aayog's proposal of developing aspirational districts, which involves a fast-tracking a rise in socioeconomic condition of 117 districts across 28 states. And this meeting is also intended to discuss the 150th birth anniversary celebrations of Mahatma Gandhi and 75 years of India's independence in 2022. Amid growing rumblings in the Karnataka Congress, the Grand Old Party dissolved its unit in the southern state today while retaining its president Dinesh Gundurao and working president Ishwar Khandre. Rumblings within the Karnataka Congress have grown ever since the Lok Sabha poll debacle in the state. There have also been problems of coordination in the Congress-JDS coalition government in the state. Voices of dissent have been growing in Karnataka Congress for some time now due to differences over the functioning of the coalition government in the state. Two members of the Congress were recently inducted in the Karnataka cabinet. Karnataka Chief Minister H.D. Kumaraswamy has said today he cannot express the pain he goes through every day, adding that he has the responsibility of running the government smoothly. This according to a report on NDTV. He has also claimed that there is some horse trading going on. He alleged that one of his party legislators was offered 10 crore rupees by the BJP. The BJP has said that it would not take any active steps to bring down the coalition government in the meanwhile. The party has also denied any plan of luring away legislators from the Congress or the JDS. But as things stand, the Karnataka Congress remains dissolved and Kumaraswamy is in pain, and Operation Lotus, which is of course to bloom the lotus in the south of India, seems to have a stronghold in the state. Now that World Cup news is almost mainstream news, I have to tell you that Shikhar Dhawan, who injured his left thumb during the 2019 league match with Australia, has been ruled out of the tournament. The left-hander suffered the injury when a rising delivery from Pat Cummins hit him awkwardly in the early phase of his match-winning innings, where he scored 117 off 109 balls. Dhawan didn't come out to field after that innings and also missed India's next two group games against New Zealand and Pakistan. Wicketkeeper and batsman Rishabh Pant, who had been flown to England as a cover for Shikhar Dhawan, is now his replacement. All right, turning very quickly to world business news. U.S. stock futures are higher this morning after Wall Street's best day in 2 weeks saw the Dow surge more than 350 points. This on the hopes for a U.S.-China trade deal and interest rate cut signals from the Fed. The Dow and S&P are both less than 2% away from their record highs. The Fed, of course, ends its two-day policy gathering this afternoon, followed by Jerome Powell's post-meeting news conference. The timing of a possible rate cut, which would be the first in more than a decade, remains up for debate even as of now. President Donald Trump, asked if he still wants to demote Powell, told reporters yesterday, let's see what he does. The president added he wants a level playing field from the central bank. Well, we spoke about Facebook's cryptocurrency only 2 days ago, and now it is facing political pushback, not just in America, but also in Europe. House Financial Services Chair Maxine Waters has requested that Facebook pause development of Libra. She said, given the company's troubled past, I'm requesting that Facebook agree to a moratorium. Facebook's cryptocurrency is facing political pushback in Europe as well. And a senator in the United States has proposed a bill which would blow up the business models for Facebook and other tech giants. This, according to a report on CNBC. I said earlier that there are some hopes on the US-China trade talk front. Negotiators are prepping for a meeting between Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping alongside the G20 summit in Japan next week in hopes of de-escalating this massive trade war that's been going on that I am so tired of talking about. China says it remains optimistic that a deal can be reached, despite, of course, talks famously collapsing last month. Speaking of Trump, he has finally kicked off his re-election campaign in Orlando, Florida, where, by the way, he remains hugely unpopular. Both Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden are more popular than Donald Trump in Orlando, a city in Florida, which is a state that he desperately has to win if he needs to come back in 2020. Florida is one of those weird states of the United States which decides the election. And Florida was also famously, as you remember, the place where the recount that took place, which finally elected George Bush into the White House, despite Al Gore, according to many people, righteously winning that particular election. In this kickoff rally, he, of course, brought up his old talking points. Hillary Clinton, by the way, is not contesting the election, but she came back and made several appearances in his speech. He also spoke about his favorite topics, which is fake news and the mainstream media, and the witch hunt. That was Mueller's probe and Hillary Clinton's emails. I'm getting such strong flashbacks of 2015 that I feel is a good thing, because, you know, I'll feel younger. 4 years younger is something I would trade for his constant going on about Hillary Clinton's emails. In the meanwhile, I spoke also about Xi Jinping. He is off to North Korea in a couple of days, and he's praised North Korea's correct direction in resolving political issues on the Korean Peninsula, even though the summit in Vietnam failed between the United States and Korea. The United Nations has come out with some numbers that are rather troubling. The global population of refugees, asylum seekers, and internally displaced people has grown by more than 2 million people just last year. And now the total stands at 71 million, which, if they were all put in one nation, would be the 20th most populated country in the world. That is not a good sign. A political crisis and economic collapse made Venezuela responsible for the most new asylum seekers in 2018. Well, I can't seem to stop talking about Trump. He has, of course, gone and said that Europe is bolstering its own economy at America's expense. He is increasingly viewing international economic policy through a narrow lens, seeing only how other countries' decisions affect the United States. This, according to a report, a very good report on the New York Times. But we should also let you know that the global economic growth is already slowing and the US trade war is making it worse. In a quick roundup of what's happening in the tech world, we've already spoken about Facebook's Libra facing some pushback. And we spoke yesterday about how Huawei has estimated that its revenue will be impacted by the tune of about $30 billion because of the US blacklist. Microsoft has resumed, by the way, sales of its existing stock of Huawei laptops on its online store. And once the stock runs out, customers won't be able to buy Huawei laptops until something changes in the US government's decision. The CEO of parenting benefits startup Clio has resigned after Forbes and a subsequent internal investigation discovered that she had lied about her age and CV. Shannon Spanhake resigned from the startup after these investigations and after former employees complained of a rather brutal work culture at Clio. So if you have lied about your age and your CV, there's your lesson. And if you're also a monster boss, that is also your lesson. And Alphabet's Google yesterday announced an additional $1 billion investment in housing across the San Francisco Bay Area. Google said over the next 10 years, it would repurpose at least $750 million of its land, most of which is currently zoned for office or commercial space, as residential housing. We all know what an expensive trap Bay Area housing is, and hopefully this is going to bring down the prices a little. I don't particularly understand the real estate market in the United States, and here is hoping that there is a dent in that, because San Francisco housing is just insane. You know it, because I'll be there in about a month's time. And one of the things I like doing is to find out how much my friends are paying for their flats in San Francisco, and just being shocked every single time I hear those ridiculous prices. In world political news, a report has just emerged that there is credible evidence linking Saudi Arabia's crown prince, that is MBS, to the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi last October. This, according to an independent UN rights expert calling for an international investigation. In a fresh report, UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Summary or Arbitrary Executions, that is Agnes Callamard, said she had determined that there is credible evidence. The report also stressed that no conclusion is made as to guilt. The only conclusion is that there is credible evidence. Khashoggi himself was fully aware of the powers held by the Crown Prince and was fearful of him, she went on to note. Khashoggi, who was a Washington Post contributor and a critic of Crown Prince MBS, was murdered at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul on the 2nd of October. Riyadh initially said it had no knowledge of his fate, but later blamed the murder on rogue agents. All right, in a roundup of some weird pieces of news, there's a burger that costs $1,000 and you can get it at the Oak Door Steakhouse at the Grand Hyatt Tokyo in Japan. So if you're heading to Japan anytime soon and you have $1,000 to spare for a burger, that's where you need to be. And if you're also in Japan, there's a hit Japanese TV show about work-life balance. Now, you think there are several shows about this, but this one is called I Will Not Work Overtime, Period. It is about a professional who's striving to leave the office by 6 p.m., something that I would fail horribly at because my hours are disgusting. But this is something perhaps you could try and see what your manager does to you. And another weird news coming out of the world, the French may have given us Louis Pasteur, who laid down the principles of vaccination, microbial fermentation, and of course, pasteurization. Pasteur is rightly regarded as the father of microbiology. And you would think, in the tradition of Pasteur and several other scientists who have come out of France, that the country would be full of science believers. But as it turns out, the French are the world's worst science skeptics. At least one in three people in France thinks that vaccines are unsafe. And it is exactly this kind of thinking that has resulted in a measles outbreak in the United States. Can you believe there have been more than 1,000 cases reported? Jessica Biel, better known, I suppose, as Justin Timberlake's wife, has been seen lobbying for anti-vaxxers. I'm going to tell you right now, anybody who thinks vaccination is harmful, you are an idiot. You should not be in charge of a child. There, I've said it. All right, those were the events of the world. Let's find out what happened on Dalal Street before I let you go. The final tally, on a rather volatile day, it had all sorts of swings. 500 stocks hit their 52-week low on the BSE Sensex. But eventually, at the end of the day, the Sensex rose 66 points and closed at 39,112. Nifty 50 closed flat at 11,691. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was the content of about 10 different newspapers and 10 different news websites, all in one package of less than 30 minutes. So if you listen to this in about 1.5x speed or 2x speed, you're done with a world catch-up in about 10 to 15 minutes. Do you know of a better deal? I don't. If you know of a better deal, then let me know. Then I'll also use it. But until then, this is the best deal you got. Tell me about what else I need to cover, and I will be very happy to do so. MCPodcast at nw18.com is where you will reach me. Until the next time, ladies, gentlemen, and others, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been a Money Control presentation.